The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I have a cold right now, so I'm supposed to do my LAO. We'll see what happens.
I got some feedback from my daughter's friend, 40 Vader.
Oh, no.
So maybe we'll see.
Can't be as negative as what my wife says. So that's
good. Yeah, probably not.
Rain, do you set this intro up, or is this part of the thing?
Oh, yeah, I set it up.
Nice.
Yeah, Rain's real full nice. Up. He doesn't mess around.
Real nice. Yeah, you've got... got skill, dude.
I know. Hit play, I see
Rain's reels, and I'm like, man, always playing second fiddle, you know? It's just how it is.
This is a long countdown, gotta be honest.
Just got done with the first instrument check ride I've done in 4.5 years.
Oh, you have to wear, I guess because you don't have a HUD, without the helmet, right? Suboptimal.
Gotta have it. That. Gotta have it. Gotta have it.
Just like that. I mean, I think we slowly figured this out. I have no idea what I'm doing back here. So,
yeah. Well, good.
Yeah, we're live. So there we go. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks.
We do this every single time. And I mean, it's either Vader or Bender that owns the intro here. So,
yeah, I think it's me this time. So welcome everybody to Bro Chat 11. Thankfully the name is at the top of the screen, cause I had no idea. Flash is back. He is back. And he is going to hang out with us. He's going to tell us all the things that we've been saying wrong, or at least Bender's been saying wrong, just like Billy does about the 35. And then he's going to help us kind of dive into some other stuff. We may not be able to go in as much detail as everybody would like in some topics, but you know, we'll talk about some stuff. We want to thank all the Kodiak Shack listeners for joining us for here, and then all of Rain's Afterburn podcast listeners. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for all the feedback and all the support, because it's a lot of fun making these. It does take a lot of effort and takes away time from family and friends, but it's totally worth doing. So thanks. Thanks, Flash, for being here.
Oh, no problem. No problem, man.
Yeah. How'd the instrument check go?
There we go. Oh, you know, it went good.
It's good.
They're always a little bit of nervous just jumping in. You could always screw something up, but it went good. Q1, no hits.
Nice.
You said that was the first instrument check ride you have done in 4 years?
Like the first full in the sim. At Nellis, we don't do check rides the exact same way as everybody else, because like as you're in the syllabus, you just kind of knock out the stuff, and then it's piecemeal throughout. So as long as you get all the requirements of an eval done over the course of the window, then, but as far as just like going out in the ringer, holding instruments, like just a dedicated sim to it, that was the first like full sim I've done in quite some time.
Yeah. And for those watching or listening, you have like two types of check rides in the Air Force: instrument check rides, mission check rides. Instrument check rides, being able to go out there, you have to do it. Yeah. Once a year, I forget now, but go out there and show that you can land the aircraft safely, shoot an instrument approach. Mission check is going out there, breaking things and showing you know how to employ the jet. That's a high level one. So no one likes check rides. Doesn't matter how experienced you are. Like check rides always suck.
No. Yeah. No.
They're so I have a question about the F-35 and EPs, because Bender and I have a mutual friend who's going through the TX currently. And he is not overly excited about the PFO and the FO situation, as well as some of the EPs. It seems like the 35 was built. Obviously, it's not trying to be this like massive airplane like the Raptor or the C model, which, you know, air superiority, air supremacy, no big deal. But it seems like the F-35 has a lot of EPs that are troubling and very time sensitive. So the whole like, hey, slow down is not really an option. I don't know. I don't fly it. So Flash, Bender, what do you guys have to say about that?
I think that I was the exact same way going through the TX. And then Bender, I'd love to hear your take on the whole thing. But you go through these EPs and they're all terrible. They have a lot of timer, just like you talked about, Vader, a lot of different timers. You have to get this done within 3 minutes of landing. This will overheat and you'll fall out of the sky within X number of minutes. And then I got experience in the airplane, and it's, you need to go through all those those emergency sims to see all the EPs that could happen to you. But overall, it's incredibly reliable. And a lot of these things are very, very unlikely to occur. And just kind of the old moniker of aviate, navigate, communicate still always applies. I haven't actually seen any EP in this airplane, nor heard of one where somebody actually ran into a full-on timer where they couldn't ensure they ran the checklist fully, got a little bit of backup, and were able to do stuff. But going through that TX, it is terrifying, because I'm just like, this jet is just going to fall out of the sky at all times, and there's nothing I'm going to be able to do about it. And that's not necessarily the case. It was kind of the same transition from when I had two engines to a single engine airplane, the same concerns I had, but then those kind of went away with the reliability of said single engine.
Okay. That makes sense. Cause and maybe F-16 has these same kind of, not so much the same reliability, but just the same like lack of redundancy and stuff. And I just never noticed it because it was my first airplane. And I'm like, this is how airplanes work. But hearing it secondhand from another fighter pilot who's doing a TX, I was like, that sounds suboptimal. Like the PFO, like, do you expect to land out of a PFO if your engine never quits, Bender?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I understand. Yeah, you should be able to land out of a PFO.
Okay.
I mean, it's a little bit more difficult because it puts out more thrust than the Viper did at idle. So it's so the difference between a flame out landing and a precautionary flame out landing, there's significant enough thrust that you got to fly them a little bit differently. So that is a slightly more challenging than the Viper was, I guess. And then the other thing, it's kind of a different mindset. For whatever reason, they didn't, like in the F-16 and other jets, I think you have critical action procedures. So there are certain procedures that have been identified as critical, like in time sensitive. So you have to do very specific steps really quickly. In the F-35, they're just like, we don't really want to identify those. So there are none. So you just kind of do your thing, I guess. So there's a lot of stuff, like Flash was saying, that are time critical, like battery timers and oxygen timers and stuff like that, that you're not required to know. And so a lot of guys just don't remember them. It's like this guy. So like, you see something, you're like, I think that's a bad one. I have 6 minutes. And then you like look at the checks and you're like, oh no, that's not the same one I'm thinking. So it's a little more difficult in that way, because you got to manage your own, I guess, the way you run your EPs.
How do they, do they call it a PFO versus an SFO?
I don't know is the short answer. Because what was SFO? Was it simulated flame out?
Yeah, I guess that's simulated versus like precautionary flame out landing pattern. But it is funny that it's like, are the same, it's the same exact thing you're doing. It just, we call them different
what
things.
What they essentially did is like, hey, you're going to fly a flame out profile so that as a precaution,
right?
In the event that it actually flames out. So that's kind of the thing. But when we were in the Viper, I was like, we're going to fly a simulated flame out approach on a profile as a precaution. So kind of six one way, half dozen the other. But that was a little bit in a lot of our regs here at Hill. It still says SFO airspace. based off of when we had F-16s here. So it's all kind of the same thing. The other one that for the flameout stuff is that was the biggest issue. It's still a big issue for me, is that there's not, on the F-35, there's nothing hanging off the airplane. So if you are also doing a PFO, one, that the engine puts out more thrust at idle than the Viper does, but there's also no drag to slow it down. And so there's no pylons, there's no tanks, there's no targeting pod, there's no HTS pod, there's no wingtip missiles, anything like that. So if you get going fast and you put the nose down to get on that profile to round out and land, you get screaming. And that was something that I had to kind of figure out. And like the line between being able to land it and being going too fast is pretty thin. So that was a big thing for me. And I didn't do so hot at it today, to be perfectly honest, dude, but it worked out.
What I heard, though, I assume there's things that you would do precautionary, like flame out landings for in the Viper, and you're going to high key, but they started doing that in the F-35. And then, like you said, like it's too fast. You can't slow that thing down. So now there are things that you would do a simulated flame out landing or precautionary flame out landing pattern for in the Viper that you wouldn't do in the F-35. Is that true?
Yeah, I would, there's a few things. It's really all the same, but the only big one is the communication between the computer and the engine is a little bit different. So there's a few engine EPs that are pure computer to engine communication, like with the FADEX, like a lot of the airliners have, that the Viper didn't necessarily have. So you could just have a fault in the software, and you would want to do a precautionary flame out, because in the event that the engine quits because of a severing of the communication in the software, but it's going to give you that ICAW and it's going to give you that indication that you might have to do that. That wasn't necessarily a thing. So it seemed to me that a lot of the stuff is more, or you're adding a few software based engine problems versus mechanical engine problems, like the hide oil light and things like that. So that was kind of the difference between the two jets that I kind of found.
Gotcha. Flash, you might have to do a Viper reset on your earbuds there. It's like crackling there. But and while that happens, Bender, you probably can or answer what happens if F-35 screen or HUD fails. It's just a helmet.
So the HUD is in the helmet. So if you have an HMD fail, which is what we call it, a helmet mounted display, then you do have HUD repeaters on the screen, so you can bring up on the screen what you would normally see on your helmet. So when we do an HMD out approach, it's not too bad because you just put a HUD up on these, you know, this giant, what we call a PCD. So the big screen right there, it's like, what is it, Flash? Like 5x7, I think. So it's pretty big. It's bigger than, or it's the same size as like a Viper HUD just sitting there. So it's not too bad. If you lost your HMD and your PCD, then I guess you're going to do a, I don't know. This shouldn't happen to me is probably the best answer to that. But I would probably fly on somebody's wing until I saw a runway and then go land on it. Because if you're going through the weather with that, you got like a standby little thing and that's about it.
Yes. Do you have like a stand? Are you doing something that HUD, the only real HUD out landing I did, I guess I did a couple of them with gin fails. I was really like one deployed and it'd been like 4 months. So I did a HUD out landing and came back with a bunch of bombs and a bunch of gas. But like looking at the AOA tape, and again, for those like listening or watching, like it's between your legs. It's not ergonomic at all. And you're like looking outside, trying to fly your AOA tape, the angle of attack, which is what you need to land on. And it's like, it was a suboptimal approach that I shot going in there, even like on the wing. You're like, this sucks. So do you have an AOA tape or like, I assume that's what you're doing in the F-35, right?
We do land AOA, but that's all, you know, in the HMD or on the PCDs. Flash, you can back me up. So Flash, one thing we should say is Flash is OGV. So he is the expert on emergency procedures in the F-35. So that's important. So I defer all difficult questions to Flash. But the only standby we have, I think, is just a standby like Horizon, like we call an SFD, standby flight data, right? Is that right, Flash? I'm not in my window, so this is a low threat situation for me.
See if it.
Well, first off, how's it sound? How do I sound?
It's still choppy. I'm not sure what freaked out at the beginning of this.
Yeah, it was doing good, and then it decides not to because we gotta get the mic fixed because we're gonna have to talk about balloons.
Yeah,
at some point. Well,
And while we're trying to fix that, we gotta.
How's this?
I think that's probably better. For some reason, I was just it was choppy. I don't know. Some EM spectrum there.
Apple product, man.
Yeah.
I gotta go pull up, get a studio.
There's a balloon floating somewhere over you and just calm jamming you. It's just like, it's going to be the real thing.
Dude, I'll tell you, Bender makes a nice joke about OGV. I'll tell you, there was the joke that I always said that if you have an EP that requires intimate knowledge of JTD/-1 procedures, the person you don't want on your wing is a weapons officer. It's like, don't know. Like, and now I'm OGV and it's just the best. But yeah.
You know how to like go out there and kill and break things really well. And the jet, yeah, you can read a checklist if need be, right?
That's right. If it's not in the checklist, look out.
Hey, Rain, I saw one that's an interesting question. You mind if I throw it up?
Oh, yeah. Click away.
There we go. So this is from D. Griffey 649. Bender, could you kill Vader before he ever saw you? Or Vader is the C just as BBR capable as obese Amy? So Bender,
Amelia,
what do you think?
That's pretty creative. I like
Amelia.
That.
Amelia. Oh, yeah. I like that. What do you think,
Bender? The first part of that question, could you kill Vader before? Yeah, definitely.
Not a chance.
Even in a Viper, I could probably kill Vader before. Never saw him. He's in a C model. We got this you just told piece of metal. Yeah. All I got to do is be like 30 degrees off him and he'll never see me. Though, if he's flying a V3 radar and never figures out how to tune the thing, then he could probably see an F-16 far enough away to catch me. But in a, no, I think the F-35 stands a pretty good chance of getting to Vader before he can find it.
Well, I'd say, isn't that the assumption is that a C-model-esque aircraft that other countries have made, the 35 is built to effectively be unobserved to merge with them? Is that the goal?
Yep. If it's only, so our big limitation is that we don't have that many missiles. So if it's just me versus Vader, he's going to die because I'm going to shoot all four missiles at Vader. And two of them will probably be valid, and then one of those is probably going to be a PK, high PK, that it fuses on him. So I like my odds.
Yeah.
Flash should be able to do it with one missile, probably.
It's a big plane, though, so I got a lot of, you know, I've got redundancy. I've got, two, three, who knows how many generators? Nobody knows. I don't. But, yeah, you know, I think the C model, it has science, which I am not a scientist, but scientists have told me things that the size of the radar array and the power that goes to that radar array creates a very capable piece of hardware. So even though the F-15C is an old platform with a slightly newer radar, as compared to the C model platform, it's old compared to the 35's radar. It's a big radar, so it's got a lot of power. So it's capable of seeing, you know, fighters and at distances. But the problem is, are those distances relevant when they can see you really, really far away and you can't see them as far? So that'd be the problem. The goal would really be Bender's out of missiles. I don't see him and we merge. And then that's where the fight starts. And then that would be a good fight, I think, which we need to set that up one of these days.
Yeah, we should. Well, Flash should go out first, fight you. Just make sure, like, actually, well, I'll go first so you're not warm. And then you can fight Flash.
Well, Flash can fight the guys, and then you and I will fight each other.
No. I just hope the missiles are as good as the jet.
Yeah.
Well, burning through a lot of missiles these days, you know, depleting that stockpile out there.
It's good. Build more.
That pretty expensive latex. Balloons.
Raytheon execs are just, I mean, I wonder what kind of yacht they bought today. You know, it's just like going to the bank. Oh, just all the cash.
So I've heard a lot of arguments on, so we'll get into it. We'll talk about the balloons. You want to open it? I have questions about shooting it with the bullets. Has anybody thought about this yet? Instead of shooting missiles at it?
I'm curious. to get especially Flash's opinion on this, as he's much smarter than us, as we've alluded to. But I've heard guys with like Afghanistan days with the, you know, tethered balloon with, you know, over a fob that's gotten cut loose, and they want to get it before it flies into Iran. I've heard two stories, one of a Viper, one of a Strike Eagle, trying to strafe these balloons, and it is not a pretty sight. Like, one guy saying he's almost going out of control. Just tough to shoot. I mean, you're going, probably going 350, 400 knots, and the balloon is going 20 knots maybe as it's floating along. I don't know how true this is or not, but I've heard it's actually pretty difficult. So I don't know. Flash, what do you think? What do you guys think? I don't know.
I think the controllability and the closure is a factor.
Yep.
But if you're going, if it's just kind of stationary in space, but as far as some of these things, I mean, the one over off the East Coast, like, they were really, really high. So getting up there was, we're almost talking service ceiling of the airplane, where you're having to wear different equipment before you, like, if you're going to get up there and actually, like, gun it. The other situations the last 3 days in a row, I haven't checked the news a whole lot whether we've had it four in a row, but I don't know the altitudes, like high altitude objects. I don't know how high. Doesn't necessarily matter, but like, it's the one that was the balloon was getting up there to get in lead in plane and in range to shoot the gun is going to be a factor to do that. But as far as utilizing the missiles to be able to do that, that's kind of the case. And then also, not necessarily speculating, but potentially knowing some of the guys that got to do some of these things, is they're also being asked to take these things down in very specific parameters so that they can do things to be able to observe what they are. But I don't know what those parameters are, but it might not be a gun whiz, potentially.
Yeah. The other interesting piece, like the one off South Carolina, I don't know if this is true or not, but trying to shoot that inside the territorial waters of the United States. But I don't know what the winds are at that time, right? You can assume the jet stream. I mean, it's probably at least 70 knots, if not 130 knots at that time. So really, as you're, you know, one tracking, if you just think, I mean, I'm thinking about like a complex problem, like this balloon that's getting blown rather quickly, finding it, targeting it, and shooting it in a 12-mile window. That's not a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah, you're gonna want a little bit of the flexibility of having a high-speed missile, but yeah, the overall answer to the why aren't these being gunned down? We don't know, folks. It is an interesting time. It's a wild time to be alive.
I think we could say with confidence that if we were the decision makers, and they were like, you guys just go, like, take this down however you want, there would be some balloons that would have been gunned down by this point. Well, we would have attempted to gun them down. I should say that.
Yeah. Try to. I mean, I got the option for it. We're trying to gun that thing.
Well, that's, I mean, Bender and I had a squadron commander a while ago, and I mean, a pretty common fighter pilot. I don't want to say it's a dare, but it's about as close to a dare as you can get. You know, he'd say stuff like, you don't have a hair on your butt. We'll keep it PG. If you don't try. And then he would, like, as a commander, like, pretty much tell you, like, come on, like, don't be a sissy about it. So I mean, you know, everybody talks about turning on the gun. So, you know, minus at some point, somebody's got to try it if they've got the latitude for it.
Yeah, at this point, you need a hero to go out there and just conquer it. But it was so. Raptor, F-16 have taken these down. Why hasn't F-15 taken one down yet? We can leave this to Vader. Does that have anything to do with who's carrying the war headless A9 on the day? Yeah, but yeah, why haven't you gotten in the fight, Vader? What's your community doing?
I think they're waiting for me to get through MQT. They're like, yeah, you know what, we got an ace in the hole. It's Vader. He's sooner or later I'll be the guy. No, it's so most jets that are flying around doing training are flying with the CADMs. So they don't have rocket motors. They're not real missiles. They're just like concrete that we hang on our wings for our training and stuff. So the only jets that are, unless they're set up to go take off and do this mission, are the ones that are sitting alert. So I do know that F-15s have been scrambled or launched. I don't know if they were scrambled, but they were launched to try to intercept one of these. And they weren't able to make it happen for one reason or another. I don't know exactly why, but for some reason, they either weren't able to intercept or find or whatever the process was. So they had an opportunity. They missed out. So it seems like the Raptors were the first ones, which, I mean, maybe I'm the only one, but I was like, if the Raptor wasn't the first one to shoot one of these things down, I would have been surprised. Cause again, you're like justifying this like super expensive, like air to air fighter. And then F-16s, you know, there's a ton of F-16s that are sitting alert. So I would assume they were going to get one at some point.
I think that answers the question of why did it cross the entire United States before anybody shot it down? It's because the Elmo F-22s couldn't, you know, they couldn't like strap missiles on. They had no idea how to do it. So they waited until they could get the Langley F-22s. And it took them 4 days probably to get the missiles on the jets. Like, does this thing work? Is this turning on? And then they could finally do it. That's my guess.
I think that's probably 100% accurate. And I'm sure that's exactly what happened. We can't do this. How do we do this? That's how right. do we put missiles in this thing?
Well, has everybody else seen it? Bender and I saw it one, our first deployment, where you would see bad people doing bad things in a bad area. And you're like, oh, it's easy. We're just going to drop a bomb. And they'd be like, nope, just keep an eye on them. Strike Eagles are going to show up in an hour and a half. They're going to drop on it. And there's so much like politicking and stuff like that going on where it's got to be the right people dropping the right weapon at the right time, because there's, you know, it's also a show. So it's not just the fight.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more here that was obviously not being said, and for various reasons and right reasons there. But I do think it's interesting. I saw China today, and I mean, who knows? They're claiming that we've been flying balloons over China now, right? Like that's like their standard response, which is interesting. Because again, I'm not a scientist, but like I have flown out of China with like 190 knot tailwind. Like I would think it would be tough to get a balloon going westbound into that kind of wind over China. Now, maybe, you know, we got rocket motors on our balloons and we can make it happen. But yeah, maybe, you know, tit for tat, maybe we do this kind of thing. But it is funny how it kind of goes back and forth. But the geopolitical aspect of this, like flying over a nation, lots of reasons why you might let it go across the country for a little bit, and then now we're not going to play the game. But I think this is a good question that came from Patreon as well, which is like, what's the applicable law here when it comes to shooting it down? Is it considered a vehicle with the same rights as an aircraft with respect to rules of intercept, warning, VID, et cetera? This is, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer either. So I'm not a scientist, not a lawyer.
Well, Flash being OGV is probably about as close to that as we've got. Yeah.
He is the law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. No, that I think it's a great question. Like, I thought about this a lot. And like, as far as like the laws and rules going to shoot it down, you know, it really doesn't. Because we were looking at, I mean, it's potentially Class A airspace. So you just have to be in communication. You have to have a flight plan in this Class A airspace. And if it's going to be a factor and or a safety factor to civilian aircraft, then that's going to be a problem. And so we don't normally just shoot things down that violate airspace unless it is a state actor. So from what we know about the other ones, we're not necessarily sure what state or entity these things came from. We're pretty sure on the first one. But as far as the laws to go ahead and shoot those things down, they haven't really been made up yet. I actually found one. There's like Title 18 of the U.S. Code talks about shooting down drones over the United States, over personal property. And there's like a bunch of different caveats. None of them apply here. So when you're kind of looking at some of this stuff where you're looking at, just like Rain was talking about, now these are just geopolitical soft rules. And do you violate them? And do you make the rules now because a suborbital potential ISR asset that crosses our airspace at somewhere between 30 and 70,000 feet or whatever they define as space now, if it's a suborbital ISR asset and we shoot it down, then that now sets the rules for all suborbital ISR assets from any country. And potentially we don't want to make the rules on that one because depending on what we do on certain things like RC-135s, all kinds of different stuff that are out there doing completely legal intelligence gathering or even atmospheric data gathering, things of that nature. If you set the rules, then now somebody can play by your rules. And that's kind of an interesting thing to take a look at. And then the other one is, as these things are coming up, I think it's very interesting the amount of resources, time, and energy that is now being devoted to a lot of this different thing on whether we can shoot these things down or the fact that it just gets shot down now. And those are the types of things that is a new kind of era in how we think about some of these things. It's going to be super interesting. But as far as the applicable law, it hasn't really been written down because we haven't ever experienced anything like this in a peacetime environment in a very, very long time.
I think it presents some unique challenges too, because like you said, this peacetime environment, we're talking about balloons, which most people scoff, right? We've been, you know, waiting for the hordes to cross the line and fighters and bombers. We're used to satellites, but now, you know, jumping back in decades of technology, although this is more advanced, there's stuff out there open source. And I was watching a video the other day of like the Beijing balloon, whatever company you want to call it, and just having these like nano drones dropping off, like going places. So the security threat from this becomes a very real threat. And not saying that's what this was, right? Because we don't know that. But if you just look and put, you know, two and two together, the threat of what a balloon is actually capable of could actually pose a significant security risk, intelligent risk, etc. So
yeah, kind of like the last time you guys had me on, we talked about what does the war with China look like, and we kind of answered it that it looks nothing like any war that we've ever had before, both on the lethality scale and how it's going to be fought. And now, did I ever think that balloons were going to be the answer? Not necessarily, but I don't think we're there. I don't think we're not there. But at the same time, it's just different. And it's different mentalities, it's different mindsets, different decision-making matrices that you're going to be kind of going through, and the different types of threat. And now it is just a little bit dialing up the temperature over however long before you get to a point where, okay, this isn't acceptable anymore. And are we just going to allow this to be the daily norm? Because for the last 3 days, it's been the daily norm, and a lot of people are asking what's going on. But it's a, like I said, wild time to be alive, and some of the stuff is going to have to get figured out pretty soon. And it's interesting, like you see like all the congressional hearings that are going on about, like, how could we allow this to happen? And you're just like, well, we don't have any really laws about it, so we should probably be thinking about this and getting with your counterparts and kind of go from there, from the different diplomatic approaches to things.
And it's like basic stuff too, that almost like conditioning. So who knows like what's going to happen with China, Taiwan, hopefully nothing, or it's all peaceful, right? But the same tactics I looked at, like with ISIS, and I remember, you know, the Jordanian that got shot down while we were there and then ended up getting murdered. Like, they conditioned their victims, their prisoners, like a mock execution, do it 100 times, but on like, you know, 101, that's when it happens. So when you see these people getting executed, you're like, why aren't they fighting? Well, they've been through 100 mock executions and they think this is just another one of them. So it's like, yeah, you start floating balloons. It's more conditioning of like, yeah, you're gathering intel, seeing how your enemy or how your perceived enemy is reacting to it. You're wasting time, resources. Like, there's a lot that goes into here. So,
and unfortunately, with that kind of stuff, with national security, you can't have a boy who cried wolf scenario where you tune it out. Like, you just can't.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the interesting part of this thing going forward.
Yeah. What an interesting time. Yeah. To say the least. So,
man.
Yeah. Just as a final thought there, I encourage you all to write your congressman and ask them to have the F-35s from Hill take over the responsibility of shooting these things down. You know, we need a lot of test points for the F-35. If we could get those, that'd be great. So write them.
Yeah, who needs to go to a combat archer when you can just go shoot some of these?
Yeah,
get those test points.
Those jets, I mean, they're launching missiles off the rails, updating the log there. Like, yeah. Again, I didn't know that until I went to Archer that, you know, basically you've tracked every single shot from every single jet from every single station. Like, yeah, kind of cool.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
You wonder, kind of like Flash was saying, like what you'd never expect this, and then what's next, and how does this kind of continue? Like, where does it stop, or how does it not continue to just kind of snowball into other random areas of conflict? But
I don't know. Yes, I've heard some like smart people who I think are smart, like talk about this, you know, talking like 2024, Taiwan's elections, the US elections, that could be a pretty spicy year. Like if you're going to start doing things, maybe not. Well,
especially with 2025, as some people might've saw that, that memorandum, whatever it was.
Oh yeah.
About 2025, that's the year. Hopefully it's not, but that's the year.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the memorandum? I mean, it might be more full up. I only just glanced it on the meme pages.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I mean, I read it, but I didn't retain much of it. I think a lot of it was and you guys know better than I, because I forgot even who wrote it. But overall, it was pretty much just a letter from the MAGCOM commander, the lettered numbered Air Force. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
I think it was AMC
commander. AMC commander. Yep. Pretty much talking to all the people in Air Mobility Command, pretty much saying like, hey, 2025 may be it. And if it is, and then it kind of gave a guide of what is expected of them in their execution and in employment. And it was, I would say, it's pretty hardcore. No offense to AMC, but is pretty hardcore for Air Mobility Command. You know, again, like they move a lot of stuff around the world, and that's legit. But you know, shoot for the head.
So this is one line from it. I'm not smart enough to share it, right? But 2-page memorandum. But all AMC, so Air Mobility Command aligned personnel with weapons qualification, will fire a clip into a 7-meter target with the full understanding that unrepentant lethality matters most. Aim for the head. You know, I mean, they're getting ready.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
That is. Yeah. That's good stuff. A lot of people make fun of, in fact, one of the, when they scrambled the, did you see the meme where they scrambled the KC-135s to try to take out the balloon? So it has like all their little flight data, like circling, trying to get to the, anyway, it's pretty funny. But I mean, I love the attitude. I think it's freaking awesome that he's gung-ho. I mean, he's in the wrong MAGCOM, but whatever. But yeah, that's my kids. I don't know if you guys can hear them through the microphone, but
it wouldn't be a podcast without Bender unless there were some kids involved.
Yeah.
That sounds weird, but Bender has a lot of kids. So
I knew one day I'd be doing podcasts. I'm like, I got to have 7 kids so that I spice it up a little bit in the future. But I was going to say that, I mean, in Afghan, I got to throw out, you know, kudos to the AMC boys, because in Afghanistan, they were doing some crazy stuff where they didn't have the backup or the, you know, their commanders. They were just told like get people out, and they were doing stuff with those airplanes that, you know, had never been tested, had never been verified that was going to work, and they made it happen. They did a pretty amazing job out there.
I'd say I'm not making fun of them. It is interesting. I guess the aspect of this memo, like, it starts off with I hope I'm wrong, my gut tells me we'll fight in 2025. Xi secured third term and set his war council in October 2022. Taiwan's presidential elections are 2024. Oh, he mentions it too there. And we'll offer Xi a reason. We also have him in 2024. So I guess the fact that it was such an open and blatant letter, memo, kind of, I mean, obviously stating what we all talk around and gets talked about, was interesting to me. I imagine there's some politics too at that level, in and amongst different 4-stars, Secretary of Defense, President, et cetera, that makes it kind of interesting. So, I mean, I don't think he's wrong. It's just interesting that it was such an open letter that basically publicized and put out there, like, this is what we need to do. But it's cool.
Well, that's kind of the question, right? Is there's a time, and maybe Flash has more knowledge about this once he gets his life together. See, last time Flash was here, I had heinous connectivity issues, and now Flash has them. So it's just not a great combination for internet here. It's the question of like, do you talk about it openly? Do you let everybody know what you're thinking, what you're planning, or do you like keep a secret so you have a sucker punch, you know? I don't know what is more beneficial, you know, like letting them know so they don't try anything, or don't let them know so you can surprise them when they try something. I don't know. Maybe I'm being so vague that it's lost its meaning. What do you think, Flash?
I was kind of with Bender, and apologies. Yeah. I was having some connectivity issues, just went away. No big deal. It is very easy. The language and the intensity was very easy to make fun of, but I don't hate it. What do you want him to do? Do you want him to, like, do you want the leader, the highest ranking person in your major command to sit there and say, hey, I don't want us to be ready? But
right.
The language is very easy to make fun of. I completely understand that, but I didn't hate it. And if you know the guy, if you saw him at AA and heard him talk about some of that stuff, that's exactly who that guy is. And he's going to get his people fired up, and that's how he's going to communicate, and more power to him, man.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious. Yeah. It was so out front, or so out there, but again, that, like you said, that is what you want. I mean, that's the topic we all talk around. So I just kind of curious, like, maybe, you know, hey, you need your 4-star to go out there and say this. You can't have your sec def say it, because if your sec def says it, then it's okay, we're going to war. But yeah, it's pretty in your face.
Yeah, and you're right, Flash, because I think, you know, you wanna have that intensity, and you want everybody to have that kind of killer instinct. Where I think in the fighter community, it's very baked in. I mean, day one of IFF, they're like, hey, you're here to, you know, kill bad guys and break their things. So it's just part of it. So you expect to hear things like that. So I think it does. It kind of caught me off guard or by surprise hearing it from there, but you're right. Like I would rather have that kind of a statement than the alternative of like, hey, let's not get anybody hurt. You know, let's make sure we've got all our TPS reports done or whatever, you know, BS stuff that we don't care about anyway. So.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Somewhere in there, I'm sure it says, like, make sure your OPRs are turned in 45 days before close out. 2025, yeah. Just in case.
Well, to your commander, you know, 45 days prior to the 45 days, you know.
Yeah. Which, one plug for the reserves real quick. They don't even put them on the slides until they're 45 days overdue to your commander. It's great. That 45-day extra window there.
It's perfect. Which, how theoretically.
I'm getting pretty close. I'm actually interested to test if they actually know when the 45 days for me will be. We're going to find out here in about a week. So
well, now they know. But yeah, you think that, oh, go ahead.
Yeah. So now it's out there in the open, but yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, theoretically, that's how it should work, right? You should have the entirety of the 12 months to do things. And then after 12 months, then you start cataloging it and then you submit it, rather than 10 months into the 12-month period, you already need to have written it and submitted it, for writing than rewriting. So you really have like 6 to 8 months to actually do things. And then the rest of them, once you submit that OPR, you can just skate for like 3 or 4 months. So not that I've ever done that. I just always skate. So
yeah.
Jokes on
obviously.
Them. Yeah.
It just drives me crazy. This is way off topic.
We went from China to OPR.
This is what
OPR,
we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Nice.
This mayor's lost control.
Someone needs in this comment section what a Chinese OPR looks like so we can see. How often do they do it? Do they put
right.
they fill up all the white space? Like that's pretty important. So
try to look through here. See some comments. There's no Chinese OPRs in here, but there, I mean, there's some good comments. Here's, let's get back to, from OPRs to this. That's for Flash. On the last live, I think the majority was F6. You know, what planes would you fly if you were going, graduating UPT? F-16, F-35, F-22. What would your dream sheet be today, knowing now what you see the future of the U.S. Air Force? Has it changed in just a few months, or are you still thinking Viper, F-35, F-22?
Nah, it'd be the same, man. All right. Well, actually, my bad. Yeah, like the last time when I was talking about the Viper, I would have done the Viper because that kind of laid the groundwork for what I was going to do with my professional career. It probably stayed the same. It'd be up in the air whether you'd want to go to the F-35 now, because now F-35 is waiting close to 15 years, closer to the 10-year point of IOC and kind of going there. So you can start there. And we've got a little bit more vetted tactics to where you're able to kind of build that and develop as a young fighter pilot in the F-35 in the kind of the newest fighter that we have. And then now it's kind of the next generation that you'd be transitioning from. So I wouldn't change anything. Nothing changed in the last couple months, but it was slowly, potentially, I would say give another year to where the F-16 would be a little bit of an afterthought and I'd be wanting the F-35 for the most part. But yeah, not a whole lot's changed. It's good. I had that, me and Bender were talking today. Today's the 14th anniversary of me finding out that I was going to go to navigator school instead of pilot training. Facebook reminds me every single year that was my job, my second job actually, but I got logistics first, then waiting list, combat systems officer, and then I got my pilot slot 10 days before graduation. I don't know if we talked about that last time. I don't think we did, but it was the reminder that being a pilot in the Air Force was not a predestined path for myself. So every day that comes up, it's always a good reminder of kind of where you came from and what you should be now when you're going through it 14, 13 years ago.
Man, almost.
You would have been full up Wizzo, though, I got to say. Probably the only Wizzo I'd be cool with having on the bro chat.
Yeah. That's right.
Sorry, Paco.
Who knows?
Paco,
who knows,
if you're listening, we love you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was directed at Paco. So who knows that joke?
Just specifically Paco. Honestly, I did have, who is it? I'm blanking on him now. Reem, he's Wizzo out of the weapons school teaching. He sent a message about coming on the podcast and maybe dispel some of the Strike Eagle Wizzo myths that maybe not that I've spit out over the past few months. I'm surprised we have anyone that flies a Strike Eagle listen to the podcast anymore. I'm sorry, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, why do we want to dispel the myths? I mean, we're creating the myths, like
right. These are facts.
I'm going.
We're etching them in stone, so now it's forever written.
Yeah. Any updates on the Block 4 35s, like, are they on their way? They showing up to Hill anytime soon?
So, a little bit of the block, a little bit of that, some of the like the Block 4 F-35. So you look at like the, like, it's totally fine, like hardware, software, reintegration, adding to the abilities of the airplane. the big one is like how I've gotten a little bit smarter on how test works is like, we don't actually know what block four is actually going to look like once the two mesh together and kind of got there. You get some hardware changes, you got a lot of software changes, but those hardware changes, once you get those integrated into the airplane, and then now you start to develop the software that needs to occur to interact with the hardware to get you the capability that you want. We don't even know what that necessarily looks like at the moment. It would be it's a fast process when it happens, but that's not anywhere very, very close to being on the horizon for the most part. But a lot of really cool and smart people are working on it, and like those are the things that people are kind of doing. As far as like those showing up on the streets at Hill anytime soon, it's not on the horizon at the moment. But then one day when it is on the horizon, it'll happen relatively quickly. As far as that stuff is, we know what the end game capabilities are supposed to look like, but the integration between the hardware and the software updates are still kind of in their infancy, to be perfectly honest with you.
Was Billy saying, did I hear him correctly, cool, for the block four, it's got to be a new motor upgrade in order to power everything? Or am I way off?
It's not a new motor.
I am unsure. Yeah. I am unsure.
Yeah. There might be new.
That does not sound like anything.
Drop power.
Yeah. I just made that up. But
it's going to be an awesome motor.
Yeah. It's good. That new motor is going to be great.
Super good.
I thought it already had a new motor. I mean, it's a new plane.
That's true.
Well, that's what I know. The Merge newsletter talked about it a while ago about how just all the power requirements, all the different things, like what they're trying to do. But I think this happens with every platform. You know, they're like, hey, we need this new update for the Raptor or the Vipers if you want to keep them around. So, what else we got here? Yeah.
Got some good stuff in there.
A couple little
JMX and Scorpion. I'll take that one.
Yeah, you've done both.
Seriously.
Right?
Yeah, the JMX and Scorpion. So I had JMX in the Viper and I had Scorpion in the A10. Scorpion is the most capable helmet I've flown with, in my opinion. It probably wouldn't get all of the jobs done that we would need for air-to-air type stuff. That's not what it's generally made for. But the Block 30 Vipers fly with Scorpion with the monocle system. So the Hemet, Scorpion Hemet is kind of what it's called. but it's a super capable air-to-ground helmet. And it was awesome. And I wish I had it back.
Because you have color.
But as far as Scorpion, like, right? It's flies not.
We got a lag.
Say it one again.
You lost flash.
I was saying with the Scorpion, you have color, right? Where you can throw down like flots, the forward line of troops, like those type things. When you're looking out, you can actually see that stuff on the ground, which is huge, I would think.
Yeah, color, and yeah, that's the thing. The NVGs go like over the monocle, so you still have, because in the Jahimix you. Yeah, I don't know what we can talk. I think we're fine. But you can use MVGs with the helmet mounted device. And so that's nice. And so that's kind of the goodness of that thing. But I love the Scorpion. I didn't mind hammocks either. I just really enjoyed the Scorpion. Like I said, I kind of wish I had it back.
Here's a question for you, Flash, because the Uplook Pippers, we've talked about on the podcast before. Vader, you're syncing up and calibrating the Uplook Pippers, right? Every single time. Oh, now you're muted, Vader. No one's.
Wait, there we go.
Okay.
I do not.
This is shenanigans.
Yeah. I am briefed to do that. Well, and then I just kind of keep living my own life. So. But yeah, that is a capability, which in the F-16, it seemed like nobody used. And in the F-15C, they seem to use them. So, but I have not been convinced. Because normally what ends up happening, I think I said it last time, like I just do like this the whole time and stop flying the airplane because it's actually more difficult to aim. So I'm like, well, that doesn't help me. But I don't know. Flash, did you ever use those?
That's, yeah, that's the question.
Anybody?
I never used them.
No,
I'm not the
new one. I didn't really like, as far as the transitions through the aircraft, like I was still figuring out like the MFDs and the HOTAS before I would move on to the next one. It's just like, never got like good enough to get all the intricacies of using all of the systems and having like the planets align and all that different stuff. I never really got there to using that capability, to be honest with you.
I flew Bach 25s in the B course, and we didn't have Gehenix, so we just had whatever 55 piece, just a regular helmet. But we had the lookup scan. I don't think I ever used it once I got Gehenix. But we use that every BFM sort of. You do like the lookup scan and then shoot whatever tone you got. And so it was like the sun half the time or like an airliner. Not very often was it the guy you were fighting, but whatever. That's why you carry multiple 9Xs. Like, that's not the right thing.
We wouldn't.
That's right.
Right? Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. BFM.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unlimited.
Burn to the 9Xs.
We are burning through 9Xs at the moment.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that's a cheap way to deplete an inventory. If you just keep sending balloons over, we're going to keep shooting out with 9Xs, you know, or who knows?
Well, and it's a great way to force ourselves to buy new ones. It's like, oh man, stockpile's running out.
I did make a joke. I mean, it's probably Raytheon. They're sitting out on a boat somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, and they just keep popping these puppies up, and they're just like, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. I'm kidding. I'm sure Raytheon's not doing that.
That's right.
Sponsor the podcast.
Sure? Of course not. Yeah.
Wait, this is funny. Podcast?
No. We know Boeing's not going to sponsor the podcast. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep just alienate potential sponsors. You know.
See, it's funny that we talk about these $400 million missiles, and we're like, oh man, there goes another $500,000. It's like, that's like nothing. Like we send up, you know, like 12 F-35s and we spend more than that. You know, we do that twice a day or like five times a day at Hill or something like that. So it's funny money, you know, taxpayers.
Plus when I don't know if everybody's familiar with terrain denial, but it's a pretty high level tactic that we use in the Air Force where you put a pretty accurate bomb with like a GPS guided kit or whatever you're going to use, and then you put it into some dirt because you don't want people to walk on that dirt 2 weeks from now.
Yep.
I'm not sure that we have the test data whether or not people do walk on the dirt.
That's right. For
the
bomb.
I think they do. I've seen it where somebody, maybe not me, somebody dropped a precision guided munition on a road, but it was like flat desert all around the road. So you cannot drive specifically on the road right there, but you can put two wheels on the dirt, drive, and then now get back on the road. So we denied about 25 yards of terrain. So
that's being generous.
That's true. Yeah.
Probably I assume
25
it was a,
feet.
Yeah, I'm assuming it was a GBU 54. So, you know, 50K little pothole you put in the road.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's, you know, I guess maybe they're worried about some didn't go off. Watch out.
Yeah. They probably have
their
teams out there.
That's right.
Yeah. Scanning the roads.
Oh, man. I don't know. What can you do? Yeah, I think we all saw that.
We got this one. Why are they not using 9 mics or other older models instead?
You know what? Is actually a really good question. Why didn't we think of that?
I don't know.
That's good.
So we...
Victor, go ahead. Shout out to you, buddy.
Yeah.
Maastricht ATC right there. We had a beer in Maastricht not too long ago. So Victor. Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, I guess you guys know more than me. Be cheaper.
Yeah.
That's why the Raptors and
Maastricht just Flash. Like mics. Flash is gonna disconnect from the chat now. Well, I didn't realize that old Canadia doesn't have 9Xs. They're getting them. Checks in the mail. I guess when you're shooting down a balloon and everyone's watching, like you definitely want to hit it the first time. Could you imagine if you missed the balloon? Like we all know that got to be a difficult, like there's a lot that goes into that, but everyone's watching you miss the balloon. Like you wouldn't live that down. Man. It'd be a hospital renaming.
I'm not sure we haven't missed the balloons yet. Like, we don't know. I bet we have. True. My guess is somebody has missed the balloon.
Yeah. Well, and you think about, yeah, like that one video is like very prevalent where you see that they shot it. But outside of that, like, we don't know how many attempts it took. But I mean, that I've heard conversations where it's like the guy, the first guy who shot the first balloon, got, it's not like he got a hero's welcome in the meme department. Like, he got like destroyed in memes, and he did exactly what he was supposed to do. Think about being the first guy to miss the balloon, and then it's like, oh well, we tried, you know, and then you just go home. Like, there's gonna, that would be not be a good day. I don't think you would let it down.
If it keeps happening, it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen at some point.
Don't be the guy that misses the balloon.
And more than likely, it's not going to be anything the pilot did. Yeah, it's not going to be anything of their fault. It just might happen.
But they assuredly will.
I'm wondering what the questions are going to be there.
Like, could you imagine? But you're going to be like, that's going to follow you for the rest of your life.
Oh yeah.
You're going to get renamed. You're going to be the guy who missed the balloon. I don't even know what the names would be, but.
Yeah.
I hope the guy that shot the balloon down, the first one, was the youngest Raptor like wingman right out of MQT. I hope that'd be cool.
I don't think that's the case.
Like, I don't think it is either.
But it, I bet cool. you there's a bronze star, you know, in line for whoever did shoot that balloon down with valor. Honestly, he was in the cons, like it was full up. You don't want to be in the cons in a Raptor. It's like the most dangerous place you can be. Against the balloon. What?
I apologize for saying this one. I definitely sent it to Bender and Rain, but the meme, saying this for to 235 guys, but it's like this picture from, I think it was the Duffel blog, and it's like three F-35 shot down and 3 hour long balloon BFM engagement. And it just good. Cracked me up.
The thing is, I have no idea how difficult it is to shoot a balloon down. It might be the most difficult tactic we've ever thought of. Like, I have no idea. Like, especially if all the other things that are being asked of you, you got to film it. You got to hit it from this range. Like, if you have all these different compounding things, it's not just like, okay, huck a missile and leave and kind of go from there. But I don't know. Hey, we nailed it. Nailed it. Just,
yeah, nailed it.
We are effects givers. We are effects givers. Yeah.
The
is,
am I the
is
only
told
one?
To shoot down a balloon. The balloon is not there.
Yeah. Am I the only one? Like, I deployed, you know, did like employed weapons on a deployment. I was more stressed out at WESUP doing. So WESUP is you do these very, very scripted, very rigid shots. Like, you have to do it at this range. You have to say these things before you do it. You have to count down from 10 to zero kind of thing. I was way more stressed out of meeting all of these like test restrictions than just doing the real job, you know? And you're like, man, this is not like the real thing. This is way worse than the real thing, which makes sense because it's an Air Force organization.
Yeah, and I can completely see too, like, dissimilar formation is a tough thing when you have big speed differences. I've never intercepted a Cessna. I imagine be challenging. I've flown along an A1 Sky Raider, which flies really slow. But could you imagine going to try and rejoin with a balloon or fly past a balloon? I mean, it's just like plus out. Yeah, that'd be a tough thing to do. I'll give him credit.
Yeah, it was a good shot. Great shot. The safe escape maneuver was pretty full up. Like, he was 9 G's getting away from that thing.
Great shot.
Golf clap.
Let's see how many more. Hey, should we put an over under? Should we make a bet on number of 9 X's shot in the month of February?
Yeah, I mean, probably while in this 1 hour that we've been going, I mean, there's a good chance there's been another one shot down.
What do you think? 10? What do you think? Over under 10?
I'll take the under on that. I was gonna set the over under at so we've like from now on, I was gonna set the over under at 3.5.
Yeah. 3.5.
Aren't we already at 4?
No, he's saying after, so not counting the first four.
From here, gotcha.
Yeah. So I see.
Not I'm going under. First ones, like from here, you're going under.
I think we don't. I think we have zero more. I don't know. Down. Yeah. That's my guess.
I say 2.
0 more.
I think there's 2 that they've been launched. They're making their way. At some point, the Chinese have to stop sending balloons. It's going to cause.
This is the incentive to send. They're like generating as many as they can. They're like, send them all. Let's
so you're going 0 then?
No, I think we're going to do the math. I am going to go 0, but it's because we're doing the math and we're like, this is dumb. There's like 7,000 more like in the trade winds headed this way. Like, we're seeing a $400,000 missile in each of these. Like, stop it. Somebody stop it.
See, yeah. So, but is it conditioning now? Now the next wave of drones just has all these like nano drones that just drop and sprinkle across the United States. You know, we've been conditioned now.
No idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got some. Some people got 4. So yeah. a lot of people are taking the over, Rand.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, we got.
I think I'm in the over. See, RKW, I do appreciate
twice. You're is in it the over 8 bit? Or is it 4?
Yeah, I think I'm taking the over on this one because I think all these organizations, NORAD, Pentagon, like all these places are just showing up to work today or showed up a few hours ago, freaking out because they probably never thought about this. They probably spilled their coffee today. They probably actually did some work. You know, what do I know?
That's a good point. So I'm going to change mine. There's going to be at least one more because the F-35 has got to justify its existence. So they're going to let it fling. Speaking of people who are going to miss a balloon.
I don't know. That's how you miss a
balloon. Bender, you were the Strike Eagle advocate on all the other episodes, and now you've turned your back on them.
No, it's just one episode last week.
Well, I mean, that was the episode where we threw down with, you know, best fighter to worst fighter, and you were advocating for the Strike Eagle. Just saying.
Well, I don't remember that being exactly the case.
I mean, those exact words. You're like, I am an advocate for the Strike Eagle.
I do. I want it to be there because you have to have a wedge, and it's pretty much easy at that point. So keep it here.
The Flash. What do you
Internet
think?
Internet doesn't so lie. We can go back and check the tape.
Yeah, I've watched the tapes. It's there forever.
Well, I've heard a fellow Patch friend say that at weapons school specifically, he said that the Strike Eagle is one of the most capable fighter aircraft on the planet. Did you experience that in all your time at Nellis?
Yes. Like as far as capable airplanes, that thing is a beast. Like the hardware on it, just like you were talking about with the C model radar on there, massive radar, massive amount of power, all the pylons imaginable. Like that airplane is incredibly capable. The airplane is incredibly capable. Yeah, and I will just leave it at that.
I've been the most diplomatic answer we've had yet about the Strike Eagle.
Yeah. Once you repeat it, I think the message was
I love those guys.
However, I think the emphasis on it now, but yeah, I gave it that.
Good time. So,
Bane and all those guys, I love you, but
it's funny
it
because
also,
in an F-35
it is also the size. It is also the size of my house.
Yeah. In the F-35 community, we have pilots from everywhere, and I kid you not, if you were to line up 20 of them like on a wall, and you're like, Bender, pick out the Strike Eagle pilots, I bet you I'm 100%. I think I could do it. Like you. I think I can nail it. The A-10 guys, you can usually pick them out. Okay. A-10 but the Strike Eagle guys stick out like a sore thumb. It's like, yep, that's what I thought.
The A-10 guys just have like a huge lipper in with a Coors Light all the time, I assume.
Yeah, that's pretty much how you tell. Yeah.
It's just like a water bottle sticking out of their pocket that is definitely for chew, not for water. Yeah, that's easy. Too easy.
It's a bunch of hobo Hartmans running around. Not the name. A lot of city miles in that community.
Yeah. Oh, man. The well, nobody's talked about the current. So Jester wrote, what do you think their end game is? Are they sniffing electrons out of the air for some Elint? Not it.
And it's off the screen. I think they're up to something. It was a birthday party gone wrong. Some kid is crying over in China. His balloon got cut loose on the string. Yeah. Then the mean Americans shot it down. So I think it's nefarious, whatever they're up to.
Yep.
It's definitely nefarious.
Yeah.
The one of the memes I really enjoyed was, oh, go ahead.
Oh, apologize. There must be a lag on my sound, but I think the birthday party theory is high on the list. Like that's probably the truth. But I think there's multiple end games. If it's truly ISR, if it's truly surveillance, like they might be getting it. If it's changed the calculus of our decision making, they're getting it. I think they might have about 5 or 6 different objectives, and I think they're accomplishing a lot of them. But as far as the end game, it's a whole host of different things it could possibly be. And as far as what it's going for, and then again, like the last couple, that we haven't determined what they are. Like it hasn't been disclosed what they are yet. So who knows? But it's very interesting. I'm very interested to see over the next month or two on how this all shakes out.
I do appreciate how you said that. Yeah, they haven't disclosed what they seem to be, because the news reporting is they're unidentified. And I'm like, you shot down an airplane that you didn't identify? Like, I feel like that's not the case. But the Rain, this one's for you. Coming in hot.
Oh, I said hi. Do you do it again? Whatever.
Right,
whatever.
Here we go. Sorry, we got too many people driving the boat.
No.
So how'd you like the extra 300?
Yeah, I got to fly the extra 300 last week. That was awesome. It's completely, I would say for a prop plane, right? It was the closest feeling to a Viper. Yeah, as far as like maneuverability, obviously the thrust wasn't there, but it was probably, you know, comparable. Like if you got the G on, like you're going to deplete your energy state fairly quickly. But compared to flying something that weighs 766,000 pounds, it was kind of nice to go up there and flip upside down and pull G's. But I learned in a tailwheel plane. And then, you know, for last 20 years, haven't been flying tailwheel. So flying that, learning what a rudder pedal is again, that was unique. It was fun. You know,
yeah,
you guys are shooting down balloons and stuff, and I'm flipping upside down.
Did you pull some G's? Like how many did you get? Like
6. I mean, the extra, cause depending on weight and occupancy, like 8 G's is the limit, but single occupancy, I mean, don't quote me on this. I'm probably like, hey, I'm like Bender. I'm like, there's a bunch of things, but plus 10 G's. Like I pulled 11 G's with Rob Holland in his MX, but it's instantaneous. So it's much different. Like 9.5 G's in the Viper sustain, right? Like that is pain. 11 G's, not so bad. -6 G's, absolutely terrible. That's the worst thing on earth. So they love the negative stuff. And I'm like, mm-mm. I flew with Rob, who is a world aerobatic champion. We did this whole routine. I have no idea what's happening because we're flipping upside down. Like we're stationary, like defying physics. I thought we were done. And he's like, we got enough time for an outside loop, which was absolutely terrible. So it's a different world, but flying extra is fun. I would take one.
Yeah. I mean, they seem nice. That's what I noticed the difference between the G, at least me flying the C model. The C model is very pilot dependent, but the peak G is pretty darn close to like F-16 stuff. Like I pulled 8.4, 8.6, I think. But it's like almost imperceptible. Like it's just like, hey, you pulled 8.6 back there. And it's like, holy cow, I didn't even see that. You know, like you're living in like the sevens, you know, and again, this is me. So there's other people who can probably just like set 8.5 G's and hold it. But me, it's just like this super tall, like spike and then roll off. So you don't even notice it. Like you don't even feel, you know, in the F-16, when you would like really like lay on the 9 G's, you'd like feel your body like settle in under the G. Like I've never felt that in the C model, at least not yet.
But maybe do you have a beeper in the C model? Is it?
Oh yeah, yeah. All the beepers, they all sound the same, which is not ideal. So sometimes you're like going for it and you're like, oh yeah, here we go. And then like the altitude warning is like, beep, 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 beep. And you're like, oh geez, did I just over? Oh no. And then you lose because you eased off. But yeah, it's like, again, knowing actual numbers of these things is difficult, but it's like solid tone when you're within like 2%. I'm totally wrong, but it's like once you get into like the mid 7 G's, normally if you have 9 G's allowable, because you get into footprint, and if you have any asymmetric, it constantly computes your instantaneous G, which is kind of convenient because you can over G the jet versus the F-16. So it'll tell you. So if you have 9 G's allowable and you pull back, you get into like the mid to high 7's, you'll hit single rate, beeper, you hit like 8 G's. To like 8 and some change, you'll hit double rate beeper. And then that last, like call it 8.6 to 9, is like solid tone. So like you could theoretically like set, and it's just like a solid tone of, hey, if you do anything other than hold what you got, you will over G this jet. I haven't yet heard the solid tone. I hope I don't. And I've noticed my brake turns, because everything's a brake turn in the C model. So if you're offensive, you do a brake turn into the to enter the adversary's control zone. Naturally. Or turn circle, yeah. So it's not a turn circle entry like an F-16 referred to. But your brake turns, like my first brake turn is like 6.5. And then my second one's like 7.5. And then my third one's like 8. So it's like, it's that, you know, moving the controls is different. Like it's not, because I could actually over G, like I don't have the consistent, just like snatch 8.5 G's and feel comfortable.
Does the jet tell on you if you asymmetrically over G it?
Yeah. So you have this, it's called the OWS, the OWS, and it's the over G warning system. And it's like a page, you like punch in a little cheat code and it'll bring it up on one of your screens and it'll tell you like fuselage, wings, it'll tell you the entire jet. It breaks it down into how many G's you pulled on each section and then the total. So if you have an over G, it'll tell you real time, like you'll do it and you can immediately pull up the OWS and then it'll say like, hey, you had 107% on the wings, or you had 125% and this jet is like busted. So yeah,
150% is like engineering standard, right? So
yeah, well, apparently not here, but right. But yeah, it's like if you get over 100%, you over G'd, but then like we've all seen, you know, maintenance is like, oh, that doesn't matter, and they just like put it back on the line if it's not like a heinous one.
I was just thinking, because unless the Vipers changed, it was only like 02, 04 jets, like the ones at Shaw, there's only like a handful of them that would actually be able to tell if you asymmetrically over G'd, but they only download that data every info quad data, whatever that stands for again, I forget. Because I did happen to asymmetrically over G a Viper once. So
I'd be surprised if you didn't asymmetrically over G on all of those sorties. Like, yeah, no way. I mean, everyone.
Affecting them. They only called me on one. So Hack Jackson, you know, the OG, called me on one day and said, hey, do you remember this sortie? And it was like a year in the past. I was like, yeah, I remember that. It was Evansville, Indiana. He's like, you asymmetrically over G, you know, 050. I was like, I don't deny that. There's high probability. You know, the data speaks for itself. But I was just thinking, like, of all the maneuvers you do in the Viper, like fighting, like that thing probably gets asymmetrically over G'd all the time, and we have no idea whatsoever.
All the time.
Yeah, I would brief students to asymmetrically over G the jet. Yeah, that was my tactic in high aspect. I was like, do not let go of the backstick pressure. Just start rolling. It'll be fine. And turns out most of Holloman's jets are probably asymmetrically over G'd because of this guy.
If you do it enough, though, don't you think it kind of evens out? It just like straightens everything up.
Yeah, you got to do like a counter Hobbs maneuver, like one to the left, one to the right, different sets, just to kind of bend the jet back and forth.
Yeah, I would never complain that the jets did not fly straight. Yeah, because I knew I was bending them.
Vader, we've flown a ton of airplanes, but how's going from a stick that doesn't necessarily move to like a ton of stick authority, like in the Eagle, that you actually have to fly and you can go through things and things like that that you didn't have previously in the Viper. What was the transition like? Unless you've already answered that question on one of these podcasts.
Yeah, it's definitely, I'm still learning it because it's not flying, just like doing normal things, flying to and from the airspace, takeoff, landing, all that stuff, formation, same. Like, I don't even notice. I don't even think that I don't even process that it's different. The biggest thing that I notice is when I'm fighting and I need to ask for more or ask for less of the jet, I'm terrible at it. Like it just doesn't make sense. Like, I'm like, I eased off backstick pressure and they were like, you didn't do anything. And I'm like, no, like a quarter of an inch. Like, it totally makes sense. And they're like, no, yeah, it's like three fist widths. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's, I didn't do that. And then, so that's normally when I'm, when
write
I have
down,
performance,
down, three fist width.
Yeah. Which sounds like a lot to me, but the,
Yeah,
that's the stuff where I'm just terrible at. Like, I don't process that real time. Like, I look out the window, I see what I want to do, and then I like try to fly the jet there, and then my hands just do things, and I'm like, so to speak. And then it's like, well,
my hands just do things,
and I normally don't win, so I know I'm not doing the right things.
I think that's gonna be the title of this episode. My hands just do things.
Watch out, people.
My hands just do things.
This is probably quick. You kind of mentioned it earlier, Vader, like alluded to it, but that's a simple softball one. Speaking of overgees, because that does happen. The G limit talk begs the question, what does maintenance do on planes that have been overgeed? I'm assuming a ground and inspection the entire airframe for cracks. You'd be surprised.
I think you would be surprised. Well, the first thing that you do is you go get your tapes and you go frame by frame, like Vader said earlier, because most likely you didn't overgee the jet. So it was like, what was it, like 25 frames in the Viper of over 110% or something? So
yeah, well, you started like where you first see it, go backwards, and then was it 25 frames before, 25 frames after or something? I don't know.
I could be confusing it with, you know, counting gun bullets, whatever, but something with frames. You had to have a certain amount of frames over the 110% of the G limit or something. So
yeah, but I think
that's reasonably not made up.
Yeah.
That sounds
most of our knowledge.
Yeah.
You're counting frames.
Yeah. But then it all depends on how aggressive the over G was, like duration and intensity, kind of like earthquakes, maybe. I don't know about those either. But the either way, yeah, then maintenance has varying levels of maintenance or inspections they have to do to check for stuff. So if it was a relatively mild over G, they may pull a couple panels. If it's like a super aggressive, like a couple years back, there was that one C model guy that pulled like 13 plus G's or something in the C model. And like stuff will break or bend that they're like, this plane can't fly again. Kind of like, salvaging your truck, you know, like if some accidents, the vehicle can't come away from. Same with overgees. Some overgees can be so heinous that the jets can't come back from.
Be like the movie Top Gun Maverick, where in like a matter of like 4 days, they significantly overgeed all their F-18s, but just kept on going. Like, yep. It's a 10G platform. His horns be snapping
in
half.
That's right. Oh, man.
Oh, this is another. Love this is a Vader question there.
Yeah, did you click that one? I think I was clicking the same one. Or did you click
a different
one?
Look at a simul click.
Oh, nice. So yeah. So from Jester again, do you feel the difference in the C model with the incline of the seat versus the Viper and G tolerance? I don't, because again, I'm not good at pulling G's in the F-15C. So I don't pull that many G's, like as compared to pulling G's. Yeah. And I probably won't ever. But the F-16, it was just very easy. It was like the easy button. You can pull as many G's as you want pretty much anytime you're fast. Where in the C model, you really got to work for it. So the F-16, you could sustain a lot more G's for longer than I can currently. So the vertical seat doesn't really play a factor because I just live at those higher G's much shorter periods of time. So I don't really notice it. But I'd say the vertical seat is more of an inconvenience when you want to relax and the whole time you're like sitting upright, and you're like, gosh, this just, it's not that annoying until you're like flying home and you're like, ah, I just want to like sit back, but you can't. So,
very formal.
Yeah, that's true.
Prim and proper.
Well, I got to skedaddle, guys. I'm sorry. Sorry to cut the party short.
Well, there's always one. No, this is fun. Flash, thanks for joining in.
Oh, you guys are awesome. You guys are awesome. Thanks for Bender again for thinking of me. I'd love to do this again another time. Anytime, guys.
Yeah, Flash is really, it brings the A game. We'll have to work on the mic. Let's send you next mic.
Well, yeah. It's too, well, I'm not going to say what time. Well, everybody can do the math. But it's the middle of the day, so next time maybe we should do it towards the end of the day. That's a bad on me, so that Flash can, you know, go get his
good stuff. I agree. I think Bender set this time. Everyone who's watching and had to like just change their daily plans, you can thank Bender for this time.
Flash just don't work as much.
Well, Flash, trust me, I don't. Yeah, I'll work on the technology. I'm noticing headsets and microphones. If I'm gonna be a guy on this, I need to step my game up, like I talked last time to you, Rain. So again, thanks guys, appreciate it. I love it. It's awesome.
Awesome. Thanks guys. Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.